ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் shaivam.org, தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். த டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் ஹிந்து கல்ச்சர் சொல்யூஷன் டு எமோஷனல் ப்ராப்ளம், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Today's lesson of the day, the Dancing with Shiva part, which is on good conduct. So part of Gurudeva's Bhashya is saying just what we're saying here. The Hindu fosters humility and shuns arrogance, seeks to assist, never to hinder, finds good in others, and forgets their faults. Isn't that a beautiful summary of what we were saying so far? I'll read that again. The Hindu fosters humility and shuns arrogance, seeks to assist, never to hinder, finds good in others, and forgets their faults. So seeks to assist, never to hinder, is just another way of saying what we said back here. Want to interact with every person in the spirit of encouraging that person to raise their consciousness. We want to help someone, encourage them to raise their consciousness, no matter who they are, no matter how they treat us, no matter how they treat others. That's a spiritual person. So there's a nice story on that. Story from a trip many years ago, I don't know how many years ago, to Russia. What was that, about 6 years ago, 5 years ago? Anyone remember? 5 or 6 years ago. We went to Moscow with one other monk, and for the release of the Russian translation of Dancing with Shiva. Wonderful accomplishment to have Gurudeva's books in Russian. One of the interesting aspects of Russia is they don't have very many books. In the U.S. we have too many books. You know, we're deluged with books. More books than we can possibly read, and a lot of them aren't that good because they have to rush them out every month, you know, new books. Russia doesn't have that problem. How many books are there in Russian on Hinduism? Well, maybe we were the fifth one or something. Maybe there's six now, 5 years later. They don't print a lot of books in Russia on these kinds of topics. So it was a big event, getting a new book on Hinduism in the Russian language. And so we went there for that, and we were a guest of an organization called the Tantra Sangha, which was a Shakta group. And the Swami is a very learned person and actually helped translate part of Dancing with Shiva and really loved the lexicon. In fact, he had the chart from the back of the book with the seven lokas, the 14 chakras, this and that. You know, it's a beautiful chart. He had it up on his bulletin board in the hallway. So he really appreciated the insightfulness of Gurudeva's teachings in Dancing with Shiva. So we spent a few days visiting his sangham, and on one day he took us across Moscow. Moscow is absolutely huge. We were in the subway, and I went across Moscow and visited ISKCON, Krishna Consciousness, the ISKCON Moscow Center. Met a few of the leaders there, the head of the center, and some of the Swamis and some of the Brahmachari and Brahmacharinis, and had a nice talk about what they were doing, and they were all out of jail. Some of them went to jail for a number of years, and definitely, Russian treatment of, they call them minority religions, has not been favorable. So we had a nice meeting, but you could tell there was some competitiveness between the two groups, the Tantra Sangha and the ISKCON group. So we had a book launching, and I gave a talk in English, and it was translated because almost everyone there didn't speak English. It was translated into Russian, and at that event, the ISKCON head of the center was there. And so the translator who was supposed to translate was sick, had a flu, couldn't come, and so they had a substitute who wasn't as good at translating philosophical terms and ideas. It's much more complicated than just normal travel-oriented translation. So he made a mistake, and the Ishkan leader smiled and laughed a little bit. He was so happy that the Tantra Sangha presentation had a mistake. He couldn't restrain his happiness. Oh, they made a mistake. This is great. You know. So that really impressed me. It was the opposite of Hindu solidarity, which is our point of view. You know, we want, you know, every Hindu group to flourish. And we don't feel a sense of competition because every Hindu group is unique. You know, Ishkan is Vaishnavism. Tantra Sangha was Saktism. They don't have anything in common. You know, people will be drawn to one or the other based upon their own nature. So, I mean, they're not in competition. They're not both Vaishnava groups. You know, they shouldn't feel, shouldn't laugh at one another's mistakes. So anyway, that really stuck in my mind, and that spirit of being happy when other people falter. You know, here we are taking joy in the fact that someone has made a mistake, someone has failed, someone is not doing well, is making us happy. Isn't that strange? You know. But it is a consciousness that some people have. They don't have it toward everyone. They're very selective. You know, it's their enemies or the people they don't like or their competitors or something. You know, there's some label on these people which makes them different. And therefore, it's okay to laugh when they make mistakes. It's okay to take joy when they fail. But of course, that's not what Gurudev is teaching. You know, it doesn't say help your friends. No, it says help everyone. The Hindu fosters humility and shuns arrogance, seeks to assist. It's not qualified. It doesn't say your friends or the people you like or this, but it means everybody. Even the people who don't like you. Seeks to assist, never to hinder, finds good in others and forgets their faults. So that's the subject we're exploring, this kind of human weakness which deviates from that in some circumstances. And of course, it can be based on a number of factors. In the situation we were talking about, it is based upon a sense of competition. It's like two businesses almost, Ishkan and the Tantra Sangha. At least from Ishkan's point of view, they were in competition. So they were competitors, like in a business sense, and they wanted to do better, and if their competitors faltered, that was great. But of course, religious groups shouldn't be like that. They're not a business. And on a personal level, you know, when we find ourselves feeling happy that someone made a mistake, faltered or something, why would that be? You know, someone we know, someone we work with, makes a mistake, falters. And we feel good about it. Why would we have that reaction? Because we're jealous in some way. We feel inferior to that person in some way. We have a low sense of self-esteem. Otherwise, we would never have that reaction. Somehow, we look at that person as being better than us. And if they make a mistake, that makes us better, right? It's an easier way. If we can knock someone down and stay the same, then we've improved our relationship with them, right? Instead of ourselves becoming taller, which requires work, we try and make them shorter. And then we'll be taller, finally, if we can make them shorter enough. So it's that interesting attitude. You know, we criticize someone, we backbite them, you know, we talk badly about them, remember everything they did wrong, remember all their faults, they keep shrinking in our mind. Each time we do that, they're a little bit shorter. And eventually, because we're standing still, we'll be taller than them, and our self-esteem will go up. Gee, I'm better than that person. They made so many mistakes. I remember them all. But of course, that's not helping someone, right? That's hindering them. even speaking negatively about a person, we're sending negative force, we're sending negative thought forms toward that person. So that's a subtle karma we're creating. We're hurting them. We're violating ahimsa, which is thought, word, and deed. So this is word we're talking about and thought. But it's a violation of ahimsa when we speak critically of people when there's no purpose in doing it. If we're speaking critically of someone to help them improve, that's okay. If we're really a compassionate person or a teacher or their parent or something or their supervisor at work and we're being critical of someone because we want them to improve and do better, that's one thing. But if we're being critical of someone because we're delighting in finding faults with them, that's not acceptable. That's not following this idea of helping everyone. We're hindering them by our negative words and our negative thoughts about them. So that's the subject we're developing. As I say, it's not completely done, but interesting stories, right? Interesting advice column we have going. And we'll develop it some more in future talks. Have a wonderful phase. Well, it was a beautiful Namakarana. Shaila Pushpa Sindhan. Perhaps we were waiting for Gurudeva's Murti to be present. Must be. Postpone the ceremony. Must be for that. So this is our Jivana Ritau, our Living with Shiva season of the year for 4 months. So I was giving that some thought, Living with Shiva, Hinduism's contemporary culture. So I thought I'd just say a few words on culture this morning. To show some of Gurudeva's central thoughts on culture, there's one page in Living with Shiva, which has 5 sutras, of course, and they're all on cultural accomplishments. So we'll read that first. All my devotees are encouraged to learn a skill requiring the use of their hands, such as pottery, sewing, weaving, painting, gardening, baking, or the building arts, to manifest creative benefits for family and community. Next one. All my devotees are encouraged to perfect a cultural accomplishment, be it a form of art, singing, drama, dance, or a musical instrument of Siva's ensemble, veena, mridangam, tambura, cymbals, and bamboo flute. Om. All my devotees are encouraged to embrace Sanskrit as their language of ritual worship, Shum Chief as their language of meditation, and the Chief script for offering prayers to the Devas through the sacred home of fire. Om. All my devotees are encouraged to use the South Indian lunar calendar as a daily guide to auspicious planning for travel, business, innovation, ceremony, and major life events. Our year begins with the month of Aries. Om. All my devotees are encouraged to adopt the gestures, attitudes, customs, ways of worship, dress, and refinements of Tamil Saiva protocol. They learn by living and studying with traditional Shaivites. Om Namah Shivaya. Where does culture come from? So Gurudeva, over the years, wrote many letters for major events at temples around the world, Kumbhabhishekams. Usually, they would publish the letter in the souvenir for the temple. I would help him on many of these letters, and one of the parts he always wanted to include was to say that temple is very important to have in a community because it's the temple which sustains the culture. In other words, if Hindus move to a place where there's no temple and stay there for generations, eventually the culture is going to decline. That's what he's saying. The temple is very important in sustaining the culture. So he was very happy to see Hindu temples coming up in the Hindu communities that were newly forming around the world for that very reason, that the culture would sustain. We're talking about generation after generation, not just in those who were the first generation to arrive because they were well-trained and were raised near temples. But it's in the subsequent generations that it would tend to decline. So I had a chance to speak on that once in Perth, six years ago. We attended a groundbreaking ceremony for the Hindu Temple Society of Western Australia, which was forming a temple in Perth. It was my first trip to Australia, and I found out there's a lot of distance between Perth and the rest of the country. It's way over there on the western side. So prepared a talk for that and talks for other things, and I wanted to include a statement which said this in a very simple way. And one of the higher-ranking governmental officials was there from the, I guess you call it provincial government, Western provincial government. And so I wanted her to understand how what the temple meant to us as well. So I chose the phrase that having a temple manifests greater peace in the individual, harmony at home, and tolerance in the community. So when I said tolerance, she lit up. Oh, tolerance, this is good. She was obviously concerned about that. It's always a concern when you have a diversity of ethnic groups. The question of tolerance comes up. So it's a very simple way of looking at it, that which will develop by reading something Gurudeva says on this in Living with Shiva in a second. But the idea being that, well, who gets influenced first? Well, the individual gets influenced, right, by becoming more peaceful. And if you're more peaceful, what happens? There's more harmony at home. It's proportionate, but that's with other people. So first, what's inside of us is influenced by the temple, our inner peace. Because of that, our most immediate group, which is the home, is more harmonious because we're more peaceful. The less peaceful we become on the inside, or the more disturbed we become on the inside, then the more disharmony there is in the home, because it's a reflection of that. Someone who's really unsettled and upset on the inside can't stand for everything to be harmonious. They have to disturb it. It's just, you know, I'm feeling terrible, so I'm going to make you feel terrible too. I'm going to disturb things. It's that kind of, it's an instinctive quality that comes along with the instinctive nature. If I'm miserable, I'm going to make you miserable. If I'm unhappy, I'm going to make you unhappy. If I'm not peaceful, I'm going to disturb the home with inharmonious conditions. So we get around all of that by the temple, by learning how to become peaceful in the temple. We influence our home, and because our home is harmonious, then we influence the community. Community harmony being tolerance, greater tolerance for differences, greater ability to get along. So there's a very nice paragraph on that by Gurudeva in Living with Shiva I wanted to share. When culture is flooding out of the temple, our actions are productive and our minds are creative. Our speech is pure. Our hearts rejoice and we become good citizens. Religion makes us good citizens because we are peaceful inside and we want peace in our land. Peace comes first from the individual. It is unrealistic to expect peace from our neighbors unless we are peaceful first. Unless we make ourselves peaceful through right living, right worship, and right religious culture in the home. How can we destroy all of this? It's simple. Stop going to the temple. Culture will begin to go. Refinement and love will begin to go. Arguments will be heard in the homes. Divorces will fill the courts. Stress and mental illness will become the common experience. All because we stopped that one great mystical practice, temple worship. The temple is the great psychiatrist of the Hindu religion. When we forget that, we suffer the consequences of our neglect, personally and as a nation. The temple has mystical powers that surpass the greatest psychiatrists on the planet. Our priesthoods have the tools to invoke and perpetuate this power. The temple can not only analyze your problem, it can give absolution. You can leave the temple wondering what it was that was bothering you on the way to seek the help of the deity. So complete is the power of the temple. Quite often, individuals write in or on email or talk to me and there's some emotional problem that they're working through. Tending to get angry, tending to get upset, kind of depressed, fearful, whatever. And I always give the same remedy, no matter what. I ask myself, well, is this an emotional problem? If the answer is yes, if their emotions are upset, then I say, well, spend extra time worshiping Lord Ganesha. And of course, if there's a temple nearby where they live, I say, at the temple. So that's the same idea as, you know, Gurudev is saying here, the temple is the psychiatrist. In Western tradition, if you have problems, you go talk to someone about them. You can help me solve my problems. It can be a psychiatrist, can be a friend, but you feel the need to talk over your emotional problem with someone. But in the Hindu tradition, as presented by Gurudeva, we can talk it over with Lord Ganesha. It doesn't have to be a physical person. And why does that work? Because Ganesha brings us up into the Muladhara consciousness if we're below it. It helps us center ourselves if we're disturbed. So that centered, peaceful, contented consciousness is something we can all attain if we lose it through sincere worship of Lord Ganesha. So in that sense, Ganesha is our psychiatrist as well as the temple. Received some beautiful photos recently from Isan Katir of his daughter, Vinita, dancing. Did we share that with everyone? And the captions and everything. She looked very accomplished. Looked up her age and found out it was 18. And I said, whoops, she's much older than I thought. Remember her when she was younger in London with her British accent. But anyway, it was very nice. And of course, Bharatanatyam is one of the traditional forms of cultural accomplishment for Hindu girls in the southern tradition. She's a good exemplar of that. So I don't know if we shared what Isan said. He seems to have had the chance to give a little talk there as well. And he was promoting our pamphlet on the 9 qualities to cultivate in children. And he stressed the point that if you follow these 9 keys to raising children, then they become cultured people who, when they're adults, don't argue and fight. That's how he was summarizing a cultured person. A cultured person is someone who does not argue and fight. If you argue and fight, you're not cultured. That's what he was saying. Nice way. So he also made a statement. I don't know if he made it up or Gurudev said it, but it was really nice. Culture is the integration of the divine in everyday life. Isn't that nice? Culture is the integration of the divine in everyday life. So, meaning sometimes we don't. You know, the parts of our life that we're integrating the divine with, maybe everything we do at home, but once we go out the door, We forget that, and we become a different person. At school, at work, socializing, we're not following the same cultural practices we do when we're home. Or maybe we do it in one place when we're out, but we don't do it in another place. We do it when we're at work, but when we socialize, we kind of forget about our cultural traditions. So it's an interesting exercise to do, to look at the various areas of your life and look at home, school, work, social situations, and see, you know, are there any parts of my life where I'm leaving out my Saivite culture? Just acting in an externalized, non-religious way, fitting in with the American non-culture. Are there any places? So you might find some, and if so, you could give it some thought. So one idea that works very well in this sense is the idea of worshiping Lord Ganesha. So the creed says, Siva's followers all believe in the Mahadeva Lord Ganesha, son of Siva Shakti, to whom they must first supplicate before beginning any worship or task. So that means any task, right? Every single thing we start, we need to worship Lord Ganesha first. We're taking a test in school. We should be worshiping Lord Ganesha first. We're starting a new project at work. We worship Lord Ganesha. Of course, we don't have to do a half an hour puja before our test or at work, but at least in our mind, you know, we're taking time to visualize Ganesha and in some way touch into his vibration to bless the project. So that's an example of integrating the divine with everyday life. So it's good to think about. And that one particular belief is very helpful in that lots of actions would never get instigated if we were worshiping Lord Ganesha first. You can't pick up the phone and scold somebody if you worship Lord Ganesha first. You just would not do it. You'd think twice. You'd say, gee, I can't do that. I want Lord Ganesha's blessings to call someone and scold them who doesn't really deserve it. So you can see how integrating culture with life sometimes changes our actions for the better, which is the idea that there shouldn't be part of our life which is ordinary and uncultured and other parts of our life which are cultured. We should try and put the religion, put the culture through all of our life in an appropriate way according to where we live, of course. We can't all wear three stripes and a poktu and traditional clothing and go downtown. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about acting in a refined way, following our religious beliefs, and worshiping Ganesha and so forth, as is appropriate throughout whatever we're doing during the day. Or said another way, we learn culture at the temple, and then what we learn to do at the temple, we repeat at home, at school, and in the workplace. We carry the culture out, such as worshiping Ganesha first, which we always do during the puja. Jagannatha starts with Ganesha, right? We can't start with anyone else. We have to start with Ganesha. So what we learn in the temple about culture, through the pujas, through the traditional art forms of dance and music and everything, try to take those principles out and make sure we're applying them to the rest of our life. So I really like that statement by Isan. Culture is the integration of the divine in everyday life. Integration is an excellent word, meaning the two are one. They're not separate. We've integrated it. We've made it absolutely part of everything we do throughout the day. Have a wonderful week. Om Namah Shivaya.